Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome to RCR. You're with Greenwashed. And if there's one thing Don and I have chewed the fat over in the last year and a half we've been doing this, it's about the perverse outcomes of many of these green energy initiatives that we see across New Zealand. And you must have heard at least a few of these interviews I'm going to list out. We spoke with the Waiuku Rural Preservation Society, or at least Paul Brennan did, about their objection to the proposed wind farm. We spoke on RCR to Dean Ravage from the West Catlins Preservation Society about his concerns for the wind farm, not far from Don and me in Southland, the opposition to the solar farms in Wairarapa. We've also had energy experts like Brian Leland on Greenwash talking about how none of this seems to make any sense. But this, and I'll call it insanity, is not restricted to New Zealand alone. Don and I have spoken about recently how we have experts from the UK now coming to Taranaki, telling us how to do offshore wind, while at the same time, the UK is bleeding hundreds of millions of pounds annually in constraint payments. So essentially paying these people who set up these wind farms and other green energy initiatives not to produce. And recently, we became aware of similar things happening in Australia. And one organization who I read about and I spoke to John about it is the Rainforest Reserves Australia, a 100% volunteer-operated charity. And today, Don and I are going to be joined by its president, Carolyn Ems, who's been involved with revegetation projects since the 90s and has supported many conservation foundations by assisting with the purchase of over 400,000 hectares of land of high conservation value. But over the last few months, I've seen the team from Rainforest Reserves extremely active online, most recently in their seminars at the James Cook University to get their message out about the cost, the environmental and the societal costs of wind and solar developments, especially across Eastern Australia and the Great Dividing Range, which seem to be hotspots. And welcome, Caroline. I heard you speak at James Cook University, and you use this word saying that you feel betrayed. So please, welcome to Greenwashed, and tell our listeners, what did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant by feeling betrayed was that conservation groups and government that purport to be protecting biodiversity, conservation values, we're just finding that biodiversity has been forgotten in the quest for climate action. And now we're finding the betrayal amongst the whole conservation sector has expanded so far towards destruction of vast ecosystems that we've already lost and that we witnessed. So the sense of betrayal hurts, and it hurts to actually witness whole entire ecosystems that have collapsed. They've just become like industrial electricity dead zones in a way. They're very like we've actually got data that we've been researching with Caban and also with Mount Emerald Wind. And like just the data alone for Caban. In 2018, we started with 68 species that were birds that were observed across the site. By 2023, only 39 bird species were detected. But I have personally seen bird life actually head towards the wind turbines from Caban in the forest, adjoining forest, and actually just turn the other way. And now we're looking at koalas who are acutely sensitive to infrasounds, for noise, and it's become such a problem for all wildlife who are acutely sensitive. So the best one to speak with on koala impacts would be our koala ecologist, Roger Martin, who also spoke at that university event. And it's really shocking that we're quite, I'm not prepared to sacrifice our wildlife for this. It's not climate action. It's actually really, really disgusting because they're doing this across the whole Great Dividing Range. The Great Dividing Range are intact living ecosystems of some of the highest biodiversity on the planet. And for this reason, Upper Burdekin, I'm not sure if you've heard it, but they've renamed it Garabaya. So Upper Burdekin wind destruction, that has about 11 endangered species. We're taking this now to the Federal Court of Australia because we are so aggrieved by what is happening to our beautiful wildlife and our ecosystem. So we have no choice. We're only volunteers, but it'll be a test case, I guess, for Queensland. We've never done this before. But they're following the transmission lines. It's not negotiable with them. And the betrayal by the government, by everybody, hurts. It's hurting our country.
And so, listeners, if you're wondering where Carolyn's talking about, it is mostly, I gather, in the Queensland, higher country in Queensland. Is that right? Predominantly?
It's actually all over Australia now. So we're looking at enormous landscape that's required.
Sure. The areas you quoted, the Kaban and the other one, Upper Burdekin, is Queensland.
Correct.
But it's, look, you can hear the passion in your voice. So it's odd to me that other environmental groups like the Australian Conservation Foundation, Greenpeace, or your Wilderness Society want to roll out renewables faster, and yet they don't seem to be supporting their very sort of the emphasis that society has about the idea that society has about what they stand for. They don't appear to stand for it anymore. Is that a fair comment?
Yes, it is. We can't wait for ACF that are Melbourne based. We can't wait for them to catch up, because if we do, we're just going to lose critical ecosystems. Wilderness Society, we once donated $120,000. We're actually on their webpage and why we donated to them, and that was in 2007. We donated about $1 million in 2007 to conservation groups. And so the betrayal to me is very hurtful. And I think and I hope they will realise this isn't going to address climate action that they think. And I'd like to see them I would like to see them support nature now, biodiversity, and reject this massive, destructive, fast-track rollout across Australia, Queensland's Great Dividing Range, Tasmania, New South Wales. But let's look at Queensland. We're looking at 173 proposals. We're looking at 4,000 wind turbines along the Great Dividing Range, across our living ecosystems. It's just, I don't think people realise the scale of this. And that's why we're taking up a Burdekin to the Federal Court of Australia.
So just one last question before Jaspreet asks another one. I gather the former Liberal Senate MP or Senator Lee, was she the Deputy Prime Minister, I think? I think she may have been. She was put the stoppers on this, I gather. But Tania Plibersek, the current Minister for the Environment, has said, let's go. So what is the political tension at the moment? I mean, Queensland itself is going to have state elections very soon. You know, it seems to be that there's a fair bit of pressure on Tania Plibersek on a few other fronts. What hope have you now of stopping any of this stuff? Because it looks like Bowen and his mates are just carrying on with impunity, really, carrying on as they want.
Correct. That's right. Look, if obviously Rainforest Reserves is apolitical and we're independent, so we, because of that, we can't endorse anybody or, you know, we don't go there.
Yep.
But we are appealing to Minister Plibersek to walk away and revoke her decision on Upper Burdekin, on Lotus Creek. Lotus Creek has the highest koala population. It should have been a koala national park. Lotus Creek was once rejected by the previous government, right, by Minister Lee. It was once rejected. Apple, look at Apple. It once walked away from Upper Burdekin. And now, due to environmental reasons, it would have looked bad for Apple if they signed a power agreement. So it's really, for us, we would like to see the destruction to stop, take a breath, give nature a break. Please give nature a break. We're not getting a break. We need a break. We're not getting it. We're looking at just total entire ecosystems that will collapse from this.
Yeah, and I see you mentioned Apple, and you know, these organizations that virtue signal to the highest about net zero and how they're doing well, so much for the communities around them. They say they're marking 40 years in Australia with new commitments to drive opportunities to protect the planet, which will help advance renewable energy use and support indigenous communities. So I see every single bit of virtue signaling there. But what it translates into, and I'm looking at your website, and it is just astonishing how they are getting away with all of this. And listeners, if you want to go to their website, it's rainforestreserves.org.au. And the detail that's been put there from, you know, every single, virtually a census that you've done of wildlife, your organization has. I can see you guys have done your homework. But tell me what, because out here in New Zealand, we've had similar things come up and the communities seem to get no say. During COVID, there was a lot of fast track programs that were set up, you know, to re-put fresh energy into, literally speaking, fresh energy into these devastated economies. People have no say. It's on a fast track. The regional authorities have nothing. They just tell the people it's a centre government doing this. Is it a similar state of affairs there? Or are people getting to have their say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen the maps of New Zealand and I have retained some of the maps. And of course, you know, when I looked and saved the New Zealand maps, I thought, oh, yeah, they're, but you've probably had a lot more approvals in the last 12 months. So
yes,
and if you're looking at solar, I mean, or wind, I mean, it's an industrialization of your landscapes. It's not climate action. It's just not. They think it is, but if you were really passionate about a functioning biosphere, you would not destroy your ecosystems.
The local people, whichever area they are in, they are not getting a say. They are not being heard.
No, there is no voice in this. That's why we have to take legal action. Ours will be a test case. I'm hoping people will get behind us because it's a global issue. It's driven globally, our government is complicit with this, and they're abdicating. Our environment minister is abdicating her responsibilities to protect and defend the environment. I would like to see all environment ministers in New Zealand as well to actually take responsibility for their environment, for the land, for their bird life, and the people and the communities, and stop trampling all over us.
So a question that's got in the back of my mind, so I'll bring it forward. It's this hasn't just started under the Labor government. This had to have been in train under the Liberal government and perhaps even the Labor government before that. And so it's obviously grown its legs in the interim and seems to have gone apace, especially since, say, 2020. Is there, and Jaspreet brought it up before about COVID, was it sort of like, we've got people on the back foot here, we've got net zero nonsense going on over here, we've got them worried about a pandemic over here, let's just pull the fast track? Was that how it's worked, sort of rolled out?
Look, yes. So I attended some Queensland Renewable Energy Zone workshops. I've actually attended the discussions of next on the same table as developers while they were made offers by Powerlink. I mean, what I have seen is really, really terrible. So the conversation started with, oh, we've had the pandemic. And then we decided we needed to have to renew our economy. So it is linked. Lock the people up. And perhaps, I mean, I now realise that they want the land. It's a land grab. It's the greatest land grab in history that we are seeing by multinationals, by people, by corporations that owe no allegiance to our country, nor the people, nor the communities, nor particularly our wildlife. They are sacrificed for global greed and profit. And our government, whether they're being lied to, and it is illegal to mislead and lie to our government, it is illegal. And that's what this industry does. And then you've got some politicians that are offering community benefits funds, say $500,000. I was offered $500,000.
Wow.
And that offer was, I suppose, in the form of a community benefits fund. And when it was contingent on the project going ahead. Well, yeah, of course I refused. I could never accept any offer. And then I've looked further, like a year or so later, and I've realised, well, that offer was really when they sell out. But the government, that comes from us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another question is subsidies from taxpayers to establish the wind farms and the transmission infrastructure. Is there subsidies as well, aside from you paying the bill when you buy your electricity on the other side of it? Is there subsidies from taxpayers on the way through as well?
Well, yeah, they call it subsidies or credits, certificates. That's what they work on. And it's a totally parasitical industry because it's driven by fossil fuels. We've heard the wind turbine start up at Caban. And, you know, it starts up with the diesel generators, and you just hear this huge industry starting up that's driven by fossil fuels anyway.
So a wind turbine doesn't start just by the wind driving it to sort of catch the wind on like a sail and go round. It doesn't start that way.
Well, I'm not an engineer, but it's very noisy. We've got people complaining about the noise. We look at the impacts to our ecosystems, our wildlife, and we believe we are now looking at extinction in real time unless we stop this. So we've actually got a petition for Queenslanders to sign.
Right. I'm hearing that you talk about the money that was offered, of course, as a community fund, and I wish more people had your scruples. It is, you know, so many get compromised and then it's hard to go ahead. But for our listeners, because the last couple of days, there have been multiple reports from the Telegraph Australia and others talking about how these huge transmission lines are going to go through koala country. Can you give our listeners some idea of the amount of land that's at stake here, please?
Yes, I can. We're looking at 4,000 wind turbines along 3,325 kilometres of haulage roads, cutting huge, vast haulage roads for industry and bulldozers and infrastructure. That's just Queensland alone. I mean, it's if you can imagine 4,000 wind turbines along the Great Dividing Range, each requiring, you know, at least a hectare. And when we look at thousands of tonnes of reinforced concrete and Rio, it's that's going to be in situ forever. This is, and then they've never dealt with decommissioning. So there are so many issues with this that now I mean, from being a person that was pro, oh, this is green, and I'm being totally brainwashed, that's the other portrayal. We've never been, the people are not being told the truth, and that's why we're doing everything we can to expose that that this is not green. It's not going to address the climate change, they think. It's going to make things a lot worse. We're going to have drying out effects, heat effects in between these industrial energy zones. We're not going to, we may lose our rainfall along the Great Dividing Range. The Great Dividing Range has the most magnificent rivers and creeks and wetlands, and it drives our weather. You know, it's really important, our climate.
Yeah, and you know, thinking about 2024, here we are. We know stuff compared to 150 years ago, or 200 years ago, or even 50 years ago. The stuff you don't have to do. The stuff you don't have to do, and we won't even address the conversation that we need to have in New Zealand, and I think you are going to have it in Australia around nuclear. You could stop all of this tomorrow if you just had perhaps an alternate view on nuclear. And as I heard Leader of the Opposition Dutton say, you could site the nuclear power stations where the now decommissioned low-grade coal power stations are, and the infrastructure is right there, ready. Makes sense, doesn't it? But it doesn't feed the truck drivers, the miners making the steel, the cement makers, the digger operators. It doesn't feed any of that. The conductor operator, you know, when I talk about conductors, the big power wires that go through, it doesn't feed that economy quite the same, does it?
No, that's right. And I think if you asked some of the industrial leaders, which I don't have access to, but some of them are saying they embrace nuclear, you know, even though, in other words, the jobs would just pass on to the experts in energy, and we should be definitely having that national conversation with all groups, and we should be united. Nuclear could actually, as an energy option, and it could be very uniting It's safe. It is very reliable.
It may even be greener than this one.
Absolutely.
And isn't that interesting? I hear the passion in your voice for your cause, and it's admirable. But you're not alone by having that passion and linking it to something like a different future, energy future like nuclear. I've heard it from even people in Greenpeace who have suggested that that is an option that they probably should look at, because it is probably, well, is probably the lowest CO2 emitter, if CO2 is an issue, of all options. So, look, I think we're very lucky to have had you on, Carolyn, because your passion is palpable. You've obviously been at it a long time, based on, you know, and I didn't know that until we talked to you now. And you've done a lot of fundraising. You've done a lot of very good work in your community. And, I just hope that your quest bears fruit for you, and you can get some traction back, and hopefully, as you said earlier, it spills over into decent people in New Zealand too. So thank you for coming on RCR Greenwashed, and look, we'll keep up with your progress in the months ahead.
Thank you very much for having me. Lovely to meet.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Caroline.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.